This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Mark Duffield on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Yes, welcome to Inspiring Sports Stories brought to you by Bowra and O'Day. Today on the show, I'm going to talk to a bloke who was a great first-class cricketer, a very good test cricketer, and a very good cricket coach after he finished his playing career. Wayne Clark, welcome to Inspiring Sports Stories.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, great to be here.
So, mate, it's been a life well lived and a life spent in and around cricket and cricket teams. How did you get involved in cricket in the first place?
I suppose when you're a kid and in school, when I was at school, there were two things you did. You played footy or you played cricket, you know, and I had a desire to do both. It was something I did. But I suppose the thing that got me a little bit interested in cricket more was I had a school teacher that was a test cricketer in the way of, I was at Bayswater Primary School, year three, I think it was, three and four, and a fellow named Laurie Main became a teacher for a period of time. And during that period that he was there, he disappeared. You know, he just went off and he wasn't there for 2 or 3 months. And it turned out he was off to South Africa to play test cricket or something like that. And then I thought, that's pretty good. You know, that's not a bad little lifestyle sort of thing. But I suppose if I look back, I probably would have picked footy first. Well, I did, really. I really tried to make it out football more than I did at cricket. But I was just very injury prone and I was sort of forced into playing cricket. There was a few incidents that sort of made me realise that, okay, that might be the way to go. So, I played A-grade cricket. I debuted as a 15-year-old. And then it just went on from there. So I've been pretty lucky.
So go back to footy. What were you? What type of player were you? And which zone would you have been in out at Bayswater Morley?
I was in East Perth zone. I started in Swan District zone and then they changed them down to King William Street. So then I ended up becoming at East Perth. And I went down as a 15-year-old. And those days it was Colts and fourths. So you could play thirds and fourths. And I rated myself. I'd played state schoolboys footy. I thought I was pretty good. I've got better as the time's gone by. But then I just started this run of injuries. I remember I broke my hand, you know, and then I came back the first week I came back. I broke an ankle, had to have a pin put in my ankle. Came back the next year, did a collarbone. And then the next year I came back and had a depressed fracture of the cheekbone.
So that means someone belted you, basically, doesn't it?
No, actually, I turned around. It was one of those ones where you're going back with your ball and you turn around, the guy come up with a knee and hit me in the face. And then I thought, well, maybe I could still keep playing. I remember getting out of hospital pretty vividly on the Monday, and I went down to a game on the Sunday. It was the third grade we're playing. The thirds were playing down at Perth Oval. And I was with my girlfriend at the time, and I just said, look, at three-quarter time, I'll just go out and have a listen. So I've sort of still taped up and all that sort of stuff. So I went out and there's about probably 100 people standing around the coach. And these kids are kicking the football and they kicked it and went in and landed on my head. And I just went down like in a screaming heap and I ended up in the change rooms with a bit of shock. And that was sort of a bit of a message, I think, that maybe you sort of better give that away. So I think I was about 17 or 18 then, and I sort of tried to come back and play footy. I ended up going up to Swan Districts and I played 9 reserves games or something. And I became Toddy's runner when John Todd was first there. And that was one of the great experiences I've had in sport, of being John Todd's runner. And
did you have to deliver messages as they were spoken to you?
Absolutely. But I never did. I became very good at the art of Marcel Marceau in the way that I'd run out and pretend that I was delivering it and then run back in, because some of the things he'd want me to say, not so much to our players but to opposition players, I just thought, I'm not big enough and I'm not stupid enough to do that. So, yeah, that was great because I ended up in the Nawatney family for a while. So, my time there. But I used that then to really try and get myself fit for cricket. And I sort of debuted at 18, I think it was, in 1972, I think it was, went back to. And so then it just became my focus was cricket.
So Bayswater Morley was always the club in cricket?
Yep. I started at a club called Bedford, which is as an 8-year-old playing under 14s. And again, I suppose I look back now, there was a couple of 14, 15-year-olds that were coaching. One of them was Bob Massey. He was tied up with, or 16-year-old, I think he would have been. He's a bit older now than me. So, yeah, I had that influence from him very early. So being able to play with him, Les Varis was another one that had a fair bit of an influence. So, yeah, I played my first game, which, well, that was interesting in itself. I was playing under-16s in the morning and then playing thirds and fourths in the afternoon. And at the end of that year, Bayswater made it to the semi-finals in the A grade. And why the bloody hell they did it, but they picked me in the that was my debut game, was a semi-final at the Wacker.
Wow.
And a fellow by the name of Bob Cowper was playing for Netherlands at the time. He was over in WA. I think he came for 1 year. He made a big 100. So I can remember.
He made 300 in a test, didn't he?
I think so. 307? Yeah. So that was my first introduction. That was at the Wacker. In those days, they played the two semi-finals at the Wacker because they had three sets of pitches. So we played on the West Wicket. And, yeah, that was my first A-grade game, which was, quite unique.
How'd you bowl?
9 overs for 45, I think it was. Right. Like that. So no wickets, no fairy tale story, and we got beaten, we got smashed.
Were you part of the first grade team the following year?
Yeah, I did. I sort of started off in that pretty much straight away from that year and sort of probably never looked back from there. So
you made your first class debut in 74-75, I think, which was when the Englishmen were out here. Played, would you play one or two games that season?
Yeah, probably a couple, I think. I sort of played one day cricket. That was in 1972. I played my first one day game, which was in Sydney, and it was a semi final, and that was I think the Gillette Cup in those days, and we won. And went down to Melbourne to play on the Sunday against New Zealand because New Zealand were in the Gillette Cup competition then. So I played in that and then, I think it was 18 then, and sort of had a, just trying to get into the team because it was pretty strong in those days with the bowlers that we had. I mean, I suppose the thing about that first game was I'd opened the bowling with Graham McKenzie. Now, Graham McKenzie just was my absolute idol and always has been and still is. He's just an extraordinary man. So that was one of the great highlights of my career, really, to play my first game with him. But, yeah, it didn't get until a touring game, I think, against England. And then, things just sort of moved on from there. Opportunities. It was pretty tough, because WA had a pretty good bowling lineup with the Lilies. And
well, it would have been Lilly, Massey, Malone would have been around there in those days as well.
Yeah, there was.
You mentioned McKenzie was your hero. Mm. You weren't dissimilar in the action, were you? It was sort of like ambling run up, very strong body through the crease, hit the pitch hard and try and get a bit of fizz off the deck.
Well, I think I used to just do that in the backyard.
Yeah.
Because he was the sort of guy that he sort of like held onto the ball and he brought that right left shoulder right underneath and it was just all body and I just think it was one of the most beautiful actions I've seen. And I suppose I just try to copy it a hell of a lot. Probably didn't do as good a job, but it worked out okay.
You struggled for opportunity, I think, the following season. I think you might have come in for maybe one game. I think Mick Malone was injured.
Yep.
Did you feel like you were making progress or did you feel like it was stagnating a bit at that point?
It's interesting. I mean, I had confidence in my ability. I think I had a realistic view of where I was at, and I was going okay, so I just needed the opportunity, I suppose, to get there. When it did come, I just had to try and take it as much as I could. But I was into the wind bowler. I wasn't quick enough to come down breeze, so my options were pretty limited in that regard with some of the competition we've got. But, I sort of look back on my career and say, okay, I'm so happy where I've got with the ability that I had. I worked hard. But I think I probably played a role pretty well over that period of time, which I think got me to where I was. I was a certain role player. I was never going to blast sides out or whatever, but I could play a really good role in the team. And I think that then flowed into my coaching and that later on.
We'll take a break now and we'll come back and we'll talk about your first class career and your evolution into being a test player, which obviously came about at the same time as World Series cricket came about. This is Inspiring Sports Stories, brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Mark Duffield on SEN. Thanks to Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Sports Stories, brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. We're talking to Wayne Clark, the former West Australian paceman and also renowned WA coach, also coach of Yorkshire for a while. Wayne, we've got to a point where you are just making your way into the WA team. Tell us about your first full season of first-class cricket and who was around you and what sort of team there was. Was Inverarity still captain at that time?
Yeah. John Inverarity, I think, had a great influence on everybody's career around that time. You know, he was the man that was in charge, but, you know, we had the Marshes and Lairds and guys of that nature. Ian Brayshaw was also a massive influence in my career, because he captained quite a few times in that period. And Styx was pretty straight. And, and the thing was, it was a very, very much a team-based group of guys. They really enjoyed each other's company on and off the field. They played it very hard. Training in those days is a little bit different to what we see now, you know.
So what was training? How did you just go to the nets and bowl?
It was like Wednesdays. Like Tuesday, Thursdays was the club. Wednesday would be state training. Everyone had a job, of course, and you'd get there at 5, just like a normal grade game training, really, I suppose. And some blokes would go and run up to do the bridges and run around there and do the 5Ks. Others would just bowl. And it wasn't, I suppose, one of the biggest influences to WA cricket was when Darryl Foster came across from Victoria. He came as a practice captain. It wasn't a coach in those days, because the captain was always in control and Invers was the man. And Darryl just introduced different things. He was tied up at the uni. He was tied up in physical science. And we actually started doing pre-season training down at the University of WA. And, actually testing. And we're actually joining in with some of the hockey players and suddenly realised the difference in fitness between hockey players and cricket players. And so I think his influence, he introduced baseball gloves to cricket, you know, and suddenly we'd be going touring and we'd be using baseball gloves and opposition sides would be saying, well, what's going on here, you know. Mm. So that was the sort of thing that was pretty innovative at that time. And, it was a good environment. Get on the plane to go over there, you'd have a couple of beers on the way over, you know, and it was just a totally different, relaxed way that you played cricket in those days. But I think Lilly's injury was another thing that I think inspired people, the way that he suddenly got himself so fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the start of the era of guys really focusing on physical fitness in cricket, which wasn't really pride of place.
What was it like playing with Dennis Lilly, sharing a bowling attack with Dennis Lilly?
Oh, it was extraordinary, you know, and to bowl from the other end to him, you just knew that blokes were going to probably have a go at you because they thought it was too hard against him. So he probably gets you a few wickets. But just, I think playing with him sort of made you feel stronger, bigger, and the whole bit, the whole team. But you just realised why he was so good, you know, just his attitude. It was never so dire. At no stage did you think, you know, you're going to lose a game. You know, I mean, the prime moment was the miracle match when we were bowled out for 77, I think it was, or 76. And
what was that deck like? It must have been.
Yeah, it was a bit in it. Yeah, there was a bit in it. It was a bit in it at the time. But he was just coming back from injury and that too, I think, around that time. And just his attitude when we got into the change rooms, you know, they've got Viv Richards and Greg Chappell and, you know, Martin Kent, and, you know, a really strong batting lineup, and we're trying to protect 77. And just his way that, you know, Rod Marsh sort of saying, oh, you know, tried to make a speech, and he just said, let's not worry about it, let's just get out and use a few expletives. And,
yeah.
And that first over, I think, is legendary, you know, to the way that he bowled to Viv Richards, bowled five bounces in a row and then pitched one up and knocked the off stump over and run down and kicked the stump. And it just, yeah, it's just an extraordinary pleasure to be able to play with someone like that. And Rod Marsh, you know, Rod Marsh was someone, again, that he was just tough. Yep. It was just a tough competitor. You knew where you stood with him. You know, if when he was captain, if you bowled badly, he'd just say, mate, that's it, get off, you know, and I'll bring you back on later on when you're doing what I tell you to do. You know, little things like that. That was the way I was brought up. And, yeah, loved it.
In that miracle match, so I think Dennis took four.
Yep.
Did you take three?
I took three.
Three, and yep. Mick Malone got a couple, I think, when there might have been a run out.
There was a run out. That was the final one, Dennis Shuler, who didn't have the biggest of games. I think he bowled one or two overs for 25 in a total of 77 and ran out McLean, I think it was, and then cut one to Craig Sargeant in Gully. I've watched it that many times, I suppose, over that period of time. It was just an extraordinary game. And it was interesting at the change of innings how many people left and then how many came back. You know, when it started looking like something was going to happen. So, and in those days, the Wacker, you know, was quite an intimate little arena. And, yeah, it was great.
So, fascinating back in those days because all the test players used to play a lot of first-class cricket, didn't they? So the calibre of cricket you would have been playing at that level would have been very high.
Well, and the other thing, Mark, was that they'd come back and play grade cricket.
Yeah.
And it was... They wanted to, you know, they'd, if anyone said, no, you can't play, no, I will play. And they'd come back and play Shield cricket and they'd go and play. Dennis played for Perth and I think Rod did at the time. And you're expected to go back and play grade cricket. And the competition, the grade competition was an extraordinary competition then. And because each club had, you know, a couple of really quality fast bowlers and, you know, we were just producing quick bowlers all around the place. So... It was very competitive to get a spot. But, yeah, I think their attitude just sort of permeated through the whole team, you know, of commitment to WA and to WA cricket. And that just led to that success. And then eventually, you know, you got seven players in a test team, you know, out of the one team. And again, that's something that was professed to me and I still try and profess it now with the coaching that I do now is that if you create a successful team, the individual success follows. And you can see it. You know, when New South Wales are strong, they had the full representation of, you know, the test side. And then WA went through that era. Queensland went through that era. So you create the basics and you create that successful team. And that's what you try and play to say to individuals. Focus on playing for the team and doing your role and you will benefit. But if you're just selfish like now trying to, all I want to do is play IPL, you'll struggle, you know, if you set your targets like that. Do the right thing and it'll work out for you.
From memory, and correct me if I'm wrong, but after you won the miracle match, you also had to pull one out in the final against the Vics at the MCG, didn't you? Was it Mick Malone batted you to victory in that game?
Yep.
What role did you have in that one?
I was in the partnership. We were nine down, I think it was, and we needed 30-odd runs. And, We got him. It was an amazing thing. I think Alan Hurst was playing, Max Walker, and Robertson was the thing. Yeah, we were in all sorts of trouble. And, I joined Mick. He got 50-odd. I didn't get many.
Yeah.
And in those days, there was no field restrictions. And I can always remember the last ball. And I'm not sure whether it was Trevor Lachlan or that was bowling. And there was about seven or eight blokes on the boundary. And Mick French cut one, and it was the best and the safest shot, and about the only place he was going to hit a four, I think. So, we went straight across there and had to play in that, and it was a pretty extraordinary final,
Good bouncy MCG deck, was it? It was running along the ground, was it?
Wasn't running along the ground. It wasn't a bad deck, but, there were some shockers in those days. They went through a real bad period there for a while, and that was when Rod, I think, was going to use a baseball glove and stand back, you know, because they just,
Did you start to think at that stage that you may have been able to push on to higher honours to get a Guernsey in a test team?
Yeah, I don't know, to tell you the truth, it's hard to remember what I thought at those times, but I always had that in the back of your mind that, you know, who knows? And the thing with the game of cricket, you have two or three good games and suddenly you're in the mix,
yep.
You know, because, and a lot of it's about opportunity. You know, you see wicket keepers that don't get opportunities because of just the era that they're in, and there's batsmen and bowlers and, you know, my opportunity came up through World Series cricket, and I'd been performing pretty well at the time. I got an offer to go to World Series cricket.
Yeah, tell us about that. Who contacted you?
Ian Chappell and Rod Marsh. I'd nearly got on the tour. I was very close to getting on the tour, to that tour to England.
Yep.
So I knew I'm thereabouts. I'm sort of like in the 20 around the traps, and I just got a phone call out of the blue, and then I can't remember the fella that came down to see me. It was during an A-grade game down at Hillcrest Oval, and it was all a bit clandestine. You know, I had to go across the other side of them. We met behind a tree, and it was a fella that was tied up with, I just can't remember his name now. And, he discussed what was it about. I'd already spoken to Rod and Ian about the things. And
did they talk money?
Yeah, they spoke money. Yeah, yeah.
So what sort of money would you have been paid?
About $22,500 at the time, which is pretty good money.
So what were you doing for work at that stage?
I was a school teacher.
Yeah.
So, we just had our first child. There was a bit of a security base there, which I was fairly, I suppose, wary of, and, you know, not wary that, to go and do something like this was, you know, it wasn't all that secure maybe. And was I guaranteed to play in the test matches, which probably wasn't at the time. I'd be out at Ballarat, and they actually came back. And when I said that I probably wouldn't, they came back and offered it that I could just play during my school holidays. And Rob Langer did that. I don't know if you remember, Rob Langer was involved with that. And he was a school teacher at the time, and he played, but just during school holidays. And that's was quite an asset. So, but I waited up. I'd sort of made a phone call and tried to find out where I was sitting, if, you know, where the cricket was going to go and where I sat. And I wasn't guaranteed a game, but it was sort of made fairly known that I'd be probably right in the mix at the time if I stayed with the establishment. It was a pretty tough decision. It was a tough decision because it was pretty good money, you know, for the time that you were going to play. But I suppose, you know, I weighed up. I remember sitting up on the list, the pros and the cons, and, it took a long time to make that decision. But I look back at it. I think they got paid for the 2 years that they played. So financially that would have been good. But in the long term, I think I've got no regrets because I just think it was the right thing for me, as it turned out, for a career in cricket.
We'll take a break. This is Inspiring Sports Stories, brought to you by Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Mark Duffield on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Sports Stories, brought to you by Bowra and O'Day. We're talking to Wayne Clark, former WA and Australian paceman and renowned coach of cricket teams. Wayne, we talked about before the break, you'd been offered $22,000 to play World Series cricket. What would that equate to in today's money, do you reckon? How did that compare to your teaching salary, for example?
It's probably, you know, probably a year's salary around that time, I think. It wasn't much more. It wasn't much less. It's hard, you know. I kind of remember even when I went, I got picked and went to the West Indies. I was still teaching then, but I got the time off. Mm-hmm. But what I made to play the West Indies, that's what I lost through my work, sort of thing. So the money wasn't great at those days, you know. And,
which is why World Series happened in the first.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I can always remember, we played a one day final up in Brisbane, and we were getting paid $25 for the day. You know, this was a final, and they had Thompson and, you know, Borden. Anyway, Jeff Thompson ended up chatting to the lady, one of the models that was handing out the Gillette Cup things, and he ended up marrying her, actually. But they were getting paid $75.
Right.
You know, so they were just handing out, you know, Gillette Cup razors and cream and all that, and they were getting paid three times what the players were getting. So
it's amazing, isn't it?
It really was, yeah. And that was a discussion there, and that was at the build. That was probably about, might have been 75, 76, just prior to it all starting. So
yeah.
There was, and I think Cricket Australia had a fair bit of money, you know, squirreled away, and but yeah, the players were getting none of it. So I think any test player now should have a little statue of Kerry Packer at the end of the bed and just give him a little rub on the tummy every time, because, you know, what they did with World Series cricket has set up what the players get now and how the game was changed.
You are picked in the first test to play India.
Yep.
They were the team that came out here under, I think, Bishan Bedi.
Bishan Bedi, yep.
And two thrilling victories in the first and second test. You played a role both with bat and ball in those games, didn't you? You took wickets and you got important runs.
Yeah, I don't know if I got too many runs, but I've never been one of them. But yeah, look, I got four for an each innings, I think, of the first four innings, you know. So, yeah, it was a good start. It was a good start. But it went to a little bit of rubbish, I suppose, after the just in the test match here. Because the first one was in Brisbane. Second one was in Perth, and a little incident happened, which I didn't realise would affect probably the rest of my career. It was I'd got Gavaskar out four times,
yeah,
or six times really, because we played a game against India, a Shield game, and we had to come back and play in that as well. But they doubted my action. My action was questioned. But in those days, you know, you had no idea of camera work or anything. But Channel 9, I remember Channel 9 coming down and taking vision and all that sort of stuff, and yeah, everyone was quite happy with what it was. But I didn't realise that questioning of it would affect the rest of my career in a way, you know, that and it probably it ended up with me sort of playing just the 10 tests that I played. And I look back at it, because when I went to the West Indies, the first test I was playing there, at lunchtime, the umpire, Douglas Sanghew, was tied up with World Series.
Yep.
Came in and at lunch and said they were going to call me. And I changed ends and I played the rest of the series. And I didn't play the last test match, I think it was. And there was an article written by Peter McFarlane in that off-season saying that I'd never play for Australia again, and because my name had gone to the ICC. Mine and Bruce Yardley's, because Bruce Yardley was called in the West Indies at that time.
For throwing.
And
was Bruce bowling off spin at that stage, or
yeah,
was he bowling?
Yeah, no, he was bowling off spin. And and you look back, what was next series was a series against England where they blitzed us, and it was just ideal. I had my best Shield season probably. I'd had some back problems, which I had a stress fracture at the back, but I played a good season and was questioned why I didn't play, and it was made clear to me, Mike McFarlane, he says, well, your name's gone to the ICC, but back to the Bradman days, anyone with a questionable action doesn't play against England.
Yep.
He says, look, there's a series against Pakistan coming up. I bet you play against them, which I did. I played one test. Second test was in Perth, and the side that played in Perth went to England for the Prudential Cup. Bruce Yardley never went to England, and that was part of that as well. When I look back at it over a period of time, it affected him, his career, you know, and aspects as well.
I remember, I remember watching you bowl and never even questioned for a minute. But you did have the ability to bowl a good bouncer, didn't you?
Yep.
With an effort ball. And
yep.
Do you think it resulted from that? Do you think?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. My bounce was a lot quicker than Whether I did, I don't think I did. I was very wristy, and as you mentioned at the beginning, you know, I had a very sort of blasé run up, I suppose. You know, very relaxed, and I used a lot of body. And I was able to generate more. And people say, oh, you're a swing bowler. Yeah, I did. But my assets was more off the pitch, you know, that I was able to. And it goes back to Graeme McKenzie. You look at Graeme McKenzie, the way that he bowled. And that's why I modelled myself on him. And but, yeah, I suppose the disappointing thing was that I got no support from Cricket Australia. Absolutely no support. They just dropped me as soon as possible in that regard, you know. And I look back. I've never really spoken about it until about, probably 3 or 4 years ago. I just kept it to myself, and I was pretty bitter at the time in some ways, but there's no good getting worried about it. I'm the only one that would suffer. No one else cares to listen about it. But, it's interesting. And, I can talk about it now, which I never would.
Yeah. 28 wickets in that series against India.
Yeah.
You also played in a fascinating test in the West Indies, which was the third test. I think they belted the living suitcase out of you with the World Series cricket boys playing in the first couple, and then they made way, and you took wickets, and I think Craig Sargent and Graham Wood
had
the big partnership at the end of it, which that tests are hard to win in the West Indies.
We performed pretty well, it was a bit of an uphill battle in the first two tests when they had, I think, Holding and Roberts and, we had Tomo, who had sort of a bit of firepower, and then their full batting team. So, they left after that. And it was pretty tumultuous times too, because the crowd's reaction too, because their star players weren't playing. And of course, we had in the fifth test, we had a riot where they invaded the ground and the game was abandoned. And I can always remember driving out of there in a minibus with guys in the front with machine guns back in front. And when we got to a hotel, they had guards all around the place because they'd come on and there were shots fired.
So which venue was this at?
This was in Jamaica.
Jamaica's often the fire-est place, isn't it?
We were going to go back and play the next day, but they dug up the pitch and that as well. So, that was pretty frightening. And I think when World Series guys went there, there was a riot in that as well. So, it was an interesting tour, but great experience.
Very quickly, we're going to take a break and then we'll talk about your coaching career. Mm. How quick was Tomo?
Oh, he's by far the quickest I've seen and faced. Just that sling action. He didn't know where they were going. So, at times he'd buy one that would nearly be a beaner. That at that pace, he was dangerous. And I don't think I've seen anybody. Brett Lee, I saw one where he bowled at the Wacker when I was coaching against our guys, where he got up to 160 or something. I think. But I just reckon Tomo was, by far the quickest I've ever seen.
We'll take a break. This is Inspiring Sports Stories, brought to you by Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Mark Duffield on SEN. Thanks to Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Yes, welcome back to Inspiring Sports Stories, brought to you by Bower and O'Day. We're talking to Wayne Clark. Wayne, we're getting towards the end of your playing career, and then when a person's playing career finishes, they either go in a different direction or they stay around and coach or administer. How did you end up being a cricket coach?
Well, I don't know, really. It wasn't my prime aim. When I retired from cricket, I left teaching, because I still had to have a job. Rod Marsh put me onto a work at the Swan Brewery, and I suddenly became the best job I've ever had in my life, being a rep for the brewery. And I still played grade cricket, and I was sort of captain coach of teams and things like that. So I then got into a little bit of the media and that as well. Channel 9 used to broadcast the cricket on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, leading into their news. So I used to do that with Michael Thompson and Bruce Walker and Mick Malone, and I was probably asked to move on. I did have one little incident where I don't know how it was, because I was just an expert comments person, supposedly, and I was asked to pass on to the news because it went directly into the news. And I'd never used to watch Channel 9 much, and I was always a Channel 7 person, and I had to sort of pass to Tina Altieri, and I've said, oh, yeah, well done. Thanks for at the Wacker. We'll now pass to Tina Altieri for Channel 7 News.
Whoops.
Oops. And the producer in my ear, oh, boy. And I sort of finished the year, but I wasn't there next year. So. But I didn't. I was out of cricket for about 9 years. I was involved in a liquor store. I'd left the brewery and bought a liquor store with a couple of blokes, and a tiny man approached me one day. He came up and said he was the director of cricket or whatever it is, and asked if I'd be interested in putting into Coach WA. And I said, well, why? What's going on? And at that time, it was the Adam Gilchrist situation. He'd just come across.
Yep.
They had just named Damien Martin and Justin Langer as captain and vice captain, 20 and a 20-year-old or 21, I think they were. So then you had a group with Moody and all the senior blokes that wondering what's going on, because that was when they changed the names to the Warriors. So it was all about a marketing to try and do that. And then you had all these other young kids in Hussies and all that there. And anyway, I sort of said, no, I couldn't do it the first time. And then he and Chris Smith came back and I just thought, oh, well, I want a different change in direction. So I went back to cricket, which was not planned, and I loved it. But it was a tough job at the beginning, because WA cricket at the time was in a bit of turmoil. There was four little divisions, and I just went back to the basics of what I did when I played, and sort of had a little 5-point philosophy of the team and the pride of who you play for, work ethic, planning and enjoyment, and set our guidelines and work within them. Anyone that stepped outside, anyone that compromised the team, I didn't have anything to do with, you know. And one of the best things I did for WA cricket, I suppose, after all, was I used to had a bit to do with Damien Martin for quite a long time when I was coaching out at Wanneroo. And to put him as captain at that time, and both of them, was just an absolute mistake. And I can remember when I first took the job on, I said to Damien, I said, look, I don't think you should be captain, but if you decide to do it, I'll give you all the support you need. And we had a good discussion, and he decided he'd do it. But after four games it was, we hadn't won a game. He hadn't made a run. There was everything going on, and I'm trying to keep everybody together. So I went to the selectors and said, well, I think we should look at changing the captain. Oh, no. So I went, took it on myself. I went and spoke to Tom Moody. I said to Tom, look, this is what I think needs to happen. If it does happen, would you take on the captaincy? So then I went back to Damien and spoke to him and really just put the point to him that it's not doing him any good. It's not doing the club, the team any good. And I'd said that if you wanted to play test cricket, you know, you've just got to worry about what you're doing. And we went ahead and he made an announcement. And I was either, it was like I'm going to coach for a while or I'm finished at the end of the year if it didn't work. But Tom went in as captain, and then we ended up winning most of the games to get through to a final in Adelaide, which I think is one of the best games of cricket I've been involved in. It went down to, we wanted the last wicket. They wanted 11 runs. No, they had to face 11 overs, I think it was, because they only had to draw. And it was just an unbelievable game of cricket, which we lost. Well, we didn't lose it. They drew it. Right. And South Australia were above us. Last time they've ever won it. We just created a culture and a group of guys that played for each other over a period of time, and we had a pretty successful run. And if I ever look back and sort of say, people ask you what, you know, you've done, and I think it was that decision, because we had no test players, and from then, Martin Langer, Moody, Julian, they all went back and played test cricket, and then we had Hussey, Campbell, Kadich, and all these guys that were playing at the time, and we created that, as I said at the beginning of this interview, that we created that successful team environment, and then the other success followed. And that's been a philosophy of mine for the whole lot, and that hopefully is what WA cricket's still about.
Why does WA produce so many good cricketers? Do you think, you've just mentioned a very rich vein of talent from your era. We're seeing incredible depth in and around the squad at the moment. Why are we so strong?
I think we've got good facilities. When I say facilities, not at the WACA, that we will have, but I think our pitches and that we play on are very, very good. And we've had great people, great mentors to follow, you know, when it goes back to the Barry Shepherd days and, you know, the guys that come through, the Brayshaws, the Lilies, the Marshes, and the job that John Inverarity's done over that period of time, and they've stayed involved. a hell of a lot, you know. And, you know, the standards have been set for a long period of time, and the players still come back and get involved. And the professionalism now, you know, what we've seen with the 2020 and the Scorchers, you know, the way JL set that up, I think has been extraordinary. And the way Adam Voges has continued now, and just the professionalism. Beautiful conditions to play. And of course, it's us against them. It always has been, and it still is. You know, we're on this side of the thing. We've been had players that believe we should have played Test cricket. You know, bloody New South Walesmen, and, you know, paper bags with caps in it and all that sort of stuff. So,
do you reckon is that sort of us with our we do famously have a chip on the shoulder? I think I always believe it's because most federal elections are decided before they even start counting our votes. So that's kind of at the heart of it, I reckon. But is it real, do you think, this we perceive an East Coast bias where cricket's concerned? Is that real, or is it imagined?
I think we have done, yeah. And I think we relate a lot with Queensland because I think it has been pretty similar to them. You know, we only had a certain number of votes on the board. You know, we had one board member, New South Wales had three, and Victoria had three, and so there's always been that bias, but you know, it's changed. It's run well now, and, but we still like to think that, you know, we would like to use that.
Do you still do some media stuff? Do you like cricket now? Do you like what the game's become, and do you like the state of the game in Australia?
I think I'm a bit like some that I'm a little disappointed with some of the things that have happened at that top level, and until we're prepared to really be open about it and tell us really what's happened in certain situations.
So we're talking about sandpaper. Game.
Yeah, I think so. I just think there's still a lot more to come out. Until that does, I think, and I'm just, you know, my talks with just the general punter, you know, they know that all the truth hadn't come out. And I think there's a trust thing that's been lost. And until that's done, I just don't think that respect is going to be there for what, you know, we're seeing at the moment. And people are pretty quick to criticise at the moment. I still love the game. I think Sheffield Shield is, unfortunately, you know, hasn't the respect that it has, that it should have, because that's where we're producing. That's the reason we've been so strong, you know, and they've sort of shortened all the fixtures into little blocks. And, you know, even when there's a test series on here, we've got no Shield cricket to pick form on, you know. So there's little things like that. I think there's been a bit of a disrespect for the Shield game. But, I mean, I'm still involved heavily in grey cricket. I still love it. I still just love, just seeing guys succeed and trying to. And it's not about them playing state cricket or test cricket. It's about them playing at the best level that they can possibly play. And so, yeah, I remember walking in at the Wacker, I think as about a 14-year-old, and I'm still a regular down there. I've been a selector, and yeah, so yeah, love the game.
Wayne, thank you very much for joining us on the show today. Terrific to hear your story. I grew up watching you and others, so it's been a trip down memory lane for me. Wayne Clark has been brought to you today with Inspiring Sports Stories by Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.